really get, we're going to start off with Perek Yud Gimel. The truth is, perhaps the most surprising part about the Shoftim story, and maybe even Shimshon, is how much coverage he has. If I had to ask you, maybe I gave it away, I kind of blew my cover. If I had to ask you, name one of the Shoftim and say it for the Shoftim, you probably would have said Shimshon. Almost 9 out of 10 people would have said that first. No one's like, oh, Ehud Ben Gera. But that doesn't come up as much. Everyone knows who Shimshon is. And the reason why is because, A, he has more coverage, more press coverage than anyone else. He spans about 4 or 5 prakim, while hardly anyone goes into a second parak. But it's not just that he has more coverage. He has a unique lifestyle. No one does the things that he does. He's a different, out-of-the-box, not classic type of character. Things that he does are breaking buildings and burning foxes and using a jaw of a donkey to kill 1,000 people. These are not things that anyone else does. So he certainly stands out in terms of quantity. He stands out in terms of his nature. And to be honest with you, maybe the most surprising, if you really think about it, is that how does Devorah, you know, what's her birth story or Barak's birth story? No one knows. What about Yiftach? What about Gidon? No one knows any of these stories. And there's an entire perek dedicated seemingly to how Shimshon was born. And that may be, at first glance, not such a big deal, but if you think about when the author of Shimshon, Shmuel HaNavi, sat down to write this sefer, he said to himself, you know, it's really important that my readers know the story of Manoach and Eshes Manoach, because that really will somehow be important. And the question I want to ask is why? It's, again, the most unique part about him is his strength and atypical behavior. However, if you think about it from the safer's perspective, not the character's perspective, why in the world would this story be necessary? Usually, we just learn about the hero from when they become heroic, not from when their parents conceive. And therefore, somehow, this story is more than just the conception story of Shimshon. This story is already going to begin to give us an understanding of who Shimshon is. At least that's my hypothesis. Let's take a look at the story inside and read some of the psukim and begin to understand what the Navi is driving home, what message we're trying to conclude from this Manoach and Eshes Manoach story. Who are these characters? What's odd about it? And let's use all the oddities to develop a theory, and then hopefully we'll find it in Mefarshim and Chazal, as we always do. Take a look in Perek. Sometimes when I prepare this year, I cheat. Take a look at Perek Yud Gimel. Let's start off from Pasuk Beis. Vayhi ish echad mitzar mishpachat Adan Yishmo Manoach v'shto akarav lo yalada. Who does this story sound like it's about from Pasuk Beis right off the cuff?
Manoach.
It's about a man named?
Manoach.
Manoach. Once upon a time, there was a man named Manoach, and his wife, who we don't even mention her name, was an Akara Velo Yalada, the double Lashem we'll get back to, but he has a wife, and she has no children. However, from here on out, he no longer seems to be the central character of the story. Rather, Vayera Malach Hashem El Aisha, Vayomer Allah, Hineinu At Akara Velo Yalad V'harit V'yaladet Ben. Who does the angel go to? Who receives the prophecy? It almost sounds like, although there's a story about a man named Manoach and his little wife, once you get into the details of the story, the angel goes straight to her, gives her the nevuah, starts telling her what's going to happen. Let's continue. Vata, and now, Hishamrina, Val Tishtayai V'Shecha, Val Tochli Kol Tameh. Be careful, don't eat Tameh food, don't drink wine. Why kihinach harat v'yoladit ben umra le'el ha-rosha, ki nizir alokim yiyen ha-nam en abatim, hu yachel o'shiach Yisrael miyad plishtim. Here's how you act with the child. And more than that, he's going to be a national hero. Powerful nevuah. The fact that it only goes to his wife and not to him may be a technical, maybe explained based on a technical reason. It may actually reflect what I'm beginning to develop, which is, it sounds like she's the primary character. Yet we're going to have to deal with why it starts off a story about Manoach and why she has no name. Usually, having no name is reflective of what? Having a, no, for example, anyone know what Lot's wife's name was? Yeah, Eshet Lot, right? Probably that wasn't the name she was given at birth. Although if it would have been, it'd be easy to find the Shidduch. That, right? Why is her name left out? Why is it absent? Probably because She's not an important person. Okay, take a look at Pasuk 5. Vatavo Isha Vatamar Li Isha. The woman comes and says to her husband, Ish Shalah, a little tricky. Lemar Ish Elokim Bailai, Umarea Kimara Malach Elokim, Nora Ma'od, Velo Sheltav Emi Zehu Vichmo Lohi Gidli. I met a godly man, and he didn't tell me his name. I didn't ask what his name was, you know, and he never told me his name. Pasuk Zan Vayomer Li. Hanach harad v'ladet ben. You're going to have a child. Va'ata al tish t'yayim v'shechar v'atuch li kol tamei. Ki nizir l'kim yeh hanar min avatan ad yomo. So there are two things that are uniquely strange about how she communicates the prophecy to her husband. Number one, could you imagine a barren woman who had no children? And you can imagine the strain, the struggles and the pain. And then all of a sudden she gets a prophecy, she's going to have a child. You know, it's like, you'd imagine her running and screeching at this high-pitched voice, we're going to have a son, we're going to have hands up in the air, right? Wouldn't you imagine that should be her initial reaction? She walks now, she's like, okay, listen, I met an angel. I didn't ask his name. You may be interested about his name. He didn't tell me his name in case you're really curious about his name. Oh, and by the way, it's almost like a second thought. He told us we're going to have a child. It just seems like her priorities are shockingly out of order. And you can imagine, all you have to do is walk out to like Ben Yehuda on Friday and you hear how girls greet each other. Like, this should have been off the charts excitement. And yet it seems to be first introduced by technical, almost like irrelevant details about what the stinking angel's name was. Like, what was Manoach more worried about? Having a child or what was his name? Like, it's totally, okay. More than that, does she communicate all the information that she received to Manoach? She leaves out two facts, one moderately important and one overwhelmingly very important. What facts does she leave out? Number one is that he's going to be a national hero. How do you leave that out? How do you only tell your husband, yeah, I can't drink wine, I can't have tummy flu, but you leave out the fact that he's going to be a national hero? That's a really important part of the prophecy. Hu yachel hoshias Yisrael, maybe the most important part. She also leaves out a second technical point, which is what?
She can't cut his hair.
Right, we can't cut the baby's hair. That she doesn't tell him either. Ah, that you can explain a little bit later on, I don't know what, but it really is surprising. It really is surprising. I'm giving you a tough time today, huh? It really is surprising that you're not insulted, right?
No.
That both, she doesn't tell him all the information, the order she tells him, it seems like there's something else going on that we're unaware of. Okay. Then, what happens next? Pasuk Ches. Vayetar Menoach El Hashem. What happens? Menoach Davins. Vayom Rebi Adonai Ish Elohim Asher Shalachta Yavona Ode Leinu V'yoreinu Mana Selenar Hayulad. Send this angel back to us. Now, what's funny about that? Yeah, did he not realize that it only went to his wife? Isn't that why you have to ask for it again? Because he didn't go to you the first time? He's like unaware of that. How did he miss that? Vayishma Elokim b'koma Noach Hashem listens. Vayavo malach Elokim od Elisha. It's kind of like, what do they call this? Like some type of irony. Some type of poetic? What type of irony is this? He asks, send it back to us. Went to the woman the first time. It goes back to us again the second time. Only to the woman. Okay. Again, who does it seem like is more befitting, ro'oi, worthy of nevuah, of receiving an angel greeting them? The woman. She seems, again, like a very important character. V'yosheves basad, she's in the field. Umanoach isha, her husband, Noach, is enima. Then v'tima here isha, v'taretz v'tagel isha, she runs and go tells him, pasuk yidala, v'yakam v'yelach manoach acharei. So he follows his wife, and ultimately he sees the angel, v'yomer lo, ha'toish asher dibarta al isha, are you the woman who spoke to my wife? Yeah, I am. And Manoach says, okay, tell me what to do. And the angel then said, Mikol Shemeret Elisha Tishamer. Basically, I just told your wife everything. However, he repeats some of the stuff anyway. What does he repeat in Pasuk Yedalit? Mikol Sheyetze Migefen Hayayin Lo Tochal V'yayim Shechal Tesh V'chol Tuma Lo Tochal Kol Sheyetze V'siya Tishmar. What does he say? He opens and closes with the same words, which really are interesting. It's like bookending his statement. What does he open and close with? Listen to your wife. Blah, 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 blah. Listen to your wife. He says three things. Two of them are listen to your wife. What's the middle thing? The message he gave, not to his wife, but the message she gave to him. Don't eat tamei food and don't drink wine. Again, omitting two of the most important things. One moderately important, don't get a haircut. And one significantly more important, he's going to be a national hero. Then Noach invites the guy for dinner, Pasuk Tezvav, and in Tezayin, the angel then says, I'm not going to eat, but if you make a carbon, that'll be really great. Lo yada Manoach ki malach Hashem, who at the end of Pasuk Tezayin. How does Manoach not know? What's the answer? Who does know? Who doesn't know? She does know. She knew it right away. He still doesn't know. V'yom Manoach malach Hashem, mishmecha. Oh, interesting, right? What's your name? And the angel said, ki avo dvarcha v'chabnucha. I want to give you covet. I want to give you credit if you get a Rav Yomer. Lo malach Hashem, lo mezat tishal l'shmi. Why do you want a name? Why do you want to even know my name? It's not important. By the way, it's Peli anyway. And Manoach then takes the gizi izim, makes a carbon, and pasukaf vayhi ba'alot halahav me'al mizbeach. When the fire was going up, Hashemayma, heading into the heavens, the fire was ascending. Vayal malach Hashem ba'lahav ha'mizbeach. What does the angel then do? Enters into the fire and ascends heavenwards. Manoach v'ishto ruim vayiplo p'nehem artsa. They become like, they fall on their faces. Right? That must be incredible, awesome, in the literal sense, sight. An angel walking to the fire and heads up to the heaven. V'lo yasaf od malach Hashem lehe ra'ot el Manoach v'elishto oz yada Manoach ki malach Hashem hu. When does Manoach realize it's an angel? Only after the angel walks into the fire. Nothing gets by you, eh, right? When does his wife figure it out? Significant earlier. V'yom Manoach elishto mos namus ke'okim ra'inu. We're going to die. And she says, no. Lucha fates Hashem lahamisenu. If Hashem would have wanted to kill us, he would have accepted our car, but furthermore, he wouldn't have promised us a year from now we'll have a baby. They have a baby in Pasukov Dalet, and she names the baby. Question is, what's the purpose of this parak, and how do we add in all these details over here to understand the theme of the parak? Not only do Eishes Manoach's final words, as the Abarbanel points out, highlight she's the more sophisticated of the two characters. She realizes they're not going to die. After all, God just promised them a baby a year from now. God accepted their carbon. She seems to be a more insightful, just more prominent, more intelligent, the entire story. She's a primary and sharper figure. More than just the Abarbanel's point, which is she's sharp from the end, you see it the entire perek. We already pointed out that there's a man named Manoach, and boom, we go straight to his wife. Transfer of attention really captures who she is. The angel appears to her twice. Eishes Manoach instinctively recognizes, maybe you call it woman's intuition, exactly what's going on. This is an angel. She understands it. She knows exactly what's going on. Humbly, she listens to the angel. In contrast to Manoach, who skeptically disbelieves until the angel ascends heavenwards. The transfer of attention from Manoach to Eishes Manoach does not only reflect positively on her, but negatively upon him. Later, to again, the angel goes only to her. Manoach says, bring him back to us. And yet it only goes to her. And perhaps this explains the Medrash where Chazal claimed Manoach was an Am Haaretz. Not particularly bright, certainly not well-educated, not a big Talmud Chacham, not a Talmud Torah scholar. And perhaps the point is that Manoach's supposed to learn how to appreciate his wife. And he doesn't. The angel says to him twice, three things. Listen to your wife. Here's some information. Listen to your wife. But Manoach doesn't listen to his wife. You want to know why? He doesn't think he has to. Manoach is the intellect of the family. Manoach is the one who will figure out, really, if this is an angel you're talking to. You're a very cute little girl. I appreciate you telling me what you think. Let me determine whether or not this is an angel. You see the family dynamics going on here? Says the Medrash, both times the angel went to her was l'chavava be'enav, to make her beloved in his eyes. Apparently that was lacking beforehand. Manoach did not respect his wife. Certainly not her opinion. He saw himself as the center figure, the central character of the house. He is the man of the house. He is Manoach. And you want to know why she has no name? It's not because she's not seen as important by the author of the Chumash, of the Navi, pardon me, by Shmuel, but rather, why is she not seen as important? In whose eyes is she not seen as important? Exactly. And I'd like to take it one notch up. You want to know, not only does Manoach see himself as the primary character, but she plays along with it. She's kind and sensitive and unbelievably gentle. And she kind of like plays along with it. I think she's fully aware of everything that's going on. Manoach's the big, huge head of the home. You ever seen my Big Fat Greek Wedding? There's this one line in it where like the wife says, the man may be the... Iraqi, it reminds me of it.
Yeah,
it any Sparty family loves that movie more than anything. And the woman of the family, she's like, the husband is the head of the house, but the wife is the neck of the house, and she turns the husband any way she wants. I feel like that's Menachem, she's Menachem, but she's wise, she's profound, she's insightful. She gets it. And you want to know why she doesn't tell Menachem all this information? He would have been utterly disappointed if he found out the angel went to his wife over him. What self-respecting man allows for that in a relationship? Come back to us, he says. Not really, there's no way I must have accidentally ended up by my wife. She was in the right place at the right time. And you know what she tells him? All the technical things that she has to do during pregnancy. I can't eat during pregnancy, tummy food. I can't drink during pregnancy, wine. A national hero, if he finds out that that came to me, he'll be destroyed. He'll be crushed. And therefore, with remarkable, almost unparalleled sensitivity, she starts off by telling him, this is what the angel told me, cutting and pasting the message to make it very much appropriate for Manoach. That last point was made by the Alshech. If this is correct, you can take it one step further. Do you want to know why? She starts off and explains to him, I met someone today. I didn't ask his name. He didn't tell me who it was, but I think it's an angel. She's fully aware for his upcoming critique. If she'd run in saying, I met an angel, we're going to have a baby, he'd be like, slow down there. What's the angel's name? What do you have to say? Tell him, let me make sure you got this right. So she walks in and says, I know you're a little bit hesitant to believe these type of things. I know you're not going to ask. I didn't ask his name, but trust me, it's an angel. I know exactly what he told me, I have a baby. And Manoach slows down. Look at her interaction with the angel versus his. Twice during his interaction, the Navi reminds us, Manoach doesn't get it. And I'd like to suggest the first opening story about Manoach and Eshes Manoach is really a story about Eshes Manoach and her husband Manoach. Why is that important? Well, hold on to that for 1 second. I think there's a fascinating parallel that the Navi intentionally is writing this story in a way to be written in a way that draws our attention to a story back in Chumash. Anyone know what I'm referring to? What story? Not Leidas Shimshon, but Leidas Yitzchak. Let me share with you the fascinating similarities. You have a woman who's an Akara. Angel or angels are sent with advance notification that the Akara is soon to give birth, soon to have babies, soon to have children. In both narratives, the male character, Avram and Manoach, invite in angels to stay and eat. Each incident only has one parent who is approached by the angel informing them of the news. Avram is told, Sarah is not. Eshes Manoach is informed, Manoach is not. In both stories, only one parent believes the angels, the other one has some type of skepticism or hesitation. Sarai laughs that they're going to have children at such an old age. Manoach seems to be unbelievably cynical and sarcastic and doubtful. In both stories, a skeptical parent is not the one approached by the angel. Rather, it's the one more willing to believe. And listen to this. Not only are both women described as Akara, but the Ishto Akara Lo Yalad sounds awfully similar to, but Sarai Akara Ein Lavlad. The double lashon repeats itself in both places, and I believe the Radak actually calls our attention to it. Perhaps most importantly, the most important person in that generation was born during both of these stories, Yitzchak and Shimshon. And there's all sorts of similar language that the Navi uses, echoing the lashon of the Torah. If you look, for example, in Chumash, you find Vayaratz, Avram runs, Vayimaher, and he hurries. Mahari tells his wife Sarai to hurry. You find in Shoftim, Vatimaher, Vataratz. The word Maher and Ratz repeat themselves over and over again. And perhaps even the name Peli comes from the word Hayipalei Me Avraham Davar, which is exactly the story where these angels come. And the theory I'd like to raise on level number one is that there's an intentional parallel design between Leidas Yitzchak and Leidas Shimshon. Again, the most overt parallel is that angels come and predict Akara's birth a year from now. How often does that happen in Tanakh? And perhaps, lastly, Vayomer Malach Hashem El Manoach Mikol Hashem Marti El Isha Tishamer, listen to your wife. Who was the first person told listen to your wife? And perhaps level number one is that there's a parallel designed over here. Now, if this is correct, you'd wonder, why would the Navi do that? Why write this story in a way that there are 10 or 50, assume Navi knew Chumash well, and I do. Shmuel was a bucky in Chumash. Why would he write it in a story in a way where accidentally unlikely, there's like 10 parallels. Let me edit one notch higher. Not only is there a parallel between Leidas Shimshon, surprisingly, the entire life of Yitzchak and the entire life of Shimshon are shockingly similar as well. Let me share with you some of the similarities. During both of their lives, Yitzchak and Shimshon were physically tied up. Yitzchak at the Akedah, Shimshon had to push them at the end. And while being tied up, they both faced death. And while being tied up, Shimshon went blind. People poked out his eyes. Anyone know the famous Medrash? I think that may be where the Medrash got it from. That at the Akedah, Yitzchak was blinded as well. Tears from the angel's eyes fell right into his. More than that, Yitzchak marries a woman not from the local area. He goes out and finds someone's from yonder. So too Shimshon marries an outsider as well. Not someone from the localers, but someone from the Plishti camp. Both wives tricked their husband. Rivka assisted Yaakov in pretending, maybe even caused Yaakov, or facilitated or initiated Yaakov's trick in order of getting the Bechorah, getting the right bracha. Delilah as well tricks Shimshon. But more than that, both times Yitzchak and Shimshon must have been somewhat aware of the trick. After all, Yitzchak does say, Hakol kol Yaakov v'yadayim de Esav. Is that not clear that he thinks something's fishy going on and nonetheless goes along with it? And is it possible that after tying Shimshon up with the flax ropes, and then the second type of ropes, and then the third type of ropes, after each time he tells her, if you tie me up with flax ropes and these ropes, you're going to do it. Who would have thought she was going to cut my hair? He must have had some inclination, and yet nonetheless he goes through with it. And if you're not yet convinced that the story of Shimshon is designed to parallel the story of Yitzchak, particularly Shimshon's death is designed to parallel the story of Yitzchak at the Akedah, take a look at the story of Shimshon's death. It's fascinating. Where's it, Perek? Tazayin? Take a look in Pasuk Chafhei. It's a fascinating Pasuk. Take a look in Pasuk Tazayin Chafhei. Vayhi ki tov libam. When the Plishtim had a tov libam.
Good drum.
No, it's a chus having you for half.
I wish I could stay.
No, you got to do what you got to do. Feel
free. Do these guys get this every day?
Once a week.
Oh my boy. That's
Mashiach. Vayi ketov libam vayomru kiru l'shimshon v'yisachek lanu. What does that sound like? Let's yitzchak him. Vayi kiru l'shimshon v'beit ha'asurim v'yitzachek lifnehem. He danced in front of them. What word does a Navi use? V'yitzachek. What does that word sound awfully similar to? I think it's alluding to Shimshon. Pardon me. The Shimshon language is alluding to Yitzchak. And therefore, the question becomes, why in the world would the Navi so overtly, subtly, with about 10 or 12 parallels in life and in death, link the two stories together? That's a question I'd like to address as well. Okay. Before we develop our hypothesis, before we develop our answer, before we develop our theory to resolve everything we've asked so far, I believe now that we will. Every time you see a parallel, you should always ask, is there a contrast there? And I believe the contrast, the opposites. I'm sure you've seen me do this in the past. Let's talk about the differences. Let's start off with the birth story differences. In the Yitzchak event, it's Avraham was told by the angels, the father, while in the Shimshon story, it's Eshes Manoach, the mother. Where was Sarah sitting when Avraham was informed by the angels? Hinei ba?
Oh, hell.
Inside. How often do you hear these type of things where people are sitting? Where was Eshes Manoach sitting? Yosheves Basadeh. Sarah was Hinei Ba'olo, right next to her husband, overhearing, eavesdropping, and listening in. How about Eshes Manoach? Umanoach Isha Enima, not with her at all. Once the angels arrived, Avraham immediately offered the angels food. When does Manoach offer the angels food? Not when they're on their way in, but when he's on his way out. By Avram the angels eat. By Manoach, they don't eat. Both parents who were not directly informed of the baby were both skeptical, but for different reasons. Sarah was skeptical about herself. I'm 90. Can I have children? Manoach was distastefully skeptical about his wife. Could she be right? Sarah was corrected by Avraham in a wonderful, warm way where they seem to have an open relationship where they can talk to each other. How about Eshes Manoach? She would never step on her husband's toes and correct him. Avram is the man in the family who runs to his guests, to his wife, and to his animals. Yet in the Shoftim story, it's Eshes Manoach who does the running. More than that, Eshes Manoach runs to Manoach, while Avram runs from his wife. And more than that, Avram is an optimist. Avram believes there's good people in stone. Avram believes we can impact things. He trusts people. He has faith in people, while Manoach has faith in himself and nobody else. And not only are there a lot of opposites in the birth story, there's a lot of opposites in their subsequent life stories. Let me share them with you. Although both Yitzhak and Shimshon both take foreign wives, why does Yitzhak do so? Because the locals aren't good enough for him. He has to marry someone from the outside who's on par with him. How about Shimshon? All the locals are good, and he has to go below with the Plishti wife. Both find themselves, they find their wives in completely opposite ways. Yitzhak is shockingly passive. He doesn't even choose his own wife. He allows someone to do it for him, his father's servant. How about Shimshon? Not only does he not passively allow his father to make the decision, but rather, Vayomer lo aviv imo, his mother and father say to him, Ha'ein bivnot achacha uvechol ami isha ki ata olech lakachet isha miplishtim harilim. You got to take a shiksa. Interestingly enough, when Yitzchak first moves to Gerar and people fill in his wells, who are the people who pick on him and bully him around? Anyone know?
Plishtim.
There's one man in Tanakh who will not allow the Plishtim to bully him and pick on him and bully him around. Who's that? A perfect opposite. Yitzchak is afraid they're going to take his wife when in reality the Plishtim don't. Shimshon has no fear at all, but what happens? Twice they take his wife, both Delilah and the first nameless wife, anonymous wife we don't know about. And although Yitzchak and Shimshon are both tricked by their wives, Yitzchak never finds out. Shimshon clearly does. And although Yitzchak and Shimshon both face death at the year, Akedas Shimshon and Akedas Yitzchak, there's a fundamental difference, which is Shimshon actually dies. Yitzchak lives. Major difference. Shimshon's tied up by his adversaries, by his nemesis, by everyone who hates him, and Yitzchak, by his greatest adherent, by everyone who loves him, his father. And perhaps the biggest characteristic change is that Shimshon is known for strength on the outside, and Yitzchak is known for gvura, which is strength on the inside. Now the question becomes, what's the point? What are we trying to gain by this? In order to understand why Shimshon's story is written in a way that reflects the Yitzchak story, what you have to do is understand who is Yitzchak and what is his role in Chumash. And although that is a whole shiur in and of itself, a topic, bifnei atzma, in a short al-regel achas version, perhaps Yitzchak is someone who solidifies everything his father does. Avram davens mincha, shachris, Yitzchak davens mincha. In the Chumash, Avram is afraid, says, my sister is my wife. Yitzchak does the same thing, almost following him blindly without even a need, because Yitzchak's wife wasn't even taken. When there's a famine, Avram leaves. When there's a famine, what does Yitzchak want to do?
Leave.
Avram digs wells. Yitzchak digs the exact same wells. You know what Yitzchak's role is? To solidify, to concretize, to fill in his father's shoes, to do the same thing. While Yitzchak is easygoing and passive, while Yitzchak is obedient and flexible and passive, Shimshon is aggressive and violent. He ties foxes together and puts their tails on fire. He viciously kills people in brutal ways. He rips apart a lion in half. He kills 1,000 plishtim with a jaw of a donkey. Yitzchak is the most flexible, easygoing person. Shimshon is difficult. But more than that, Yitzchak solidifies religion and concretizes it to make sure it's not just Avram leading a cult. What Yitzchak does is a sense of tranquility, a national unity. And perhaps if that's the case, we're dealing with a particular time in history where Bayamim Haheim and Melech Yisrael Ish Asher Yashav Bein Av Yaseh, there's a total hefkerot. There's a total mess. We need someone not just to start leading, but to win the battles and then lead for national unity. Not just to be a military hero, which Shimshon certainly was, but he went to war by himself. We need someone to bring the people with him, to lead the masses, to inspire achdus. Shimshon will start saving the people. Hu yachel lehoshias Yisrael. Unfortunately, it's just the beginning. The prophecy never said he's going to finish it. Shimshon starts doing that. And perhaps the most interesting problem that Shimshon has is in the whole generation where everyone's doing Yasha Be'enav. Take a look and see why Shimshon chooses the wife he does. Take a look in Perek Yodal. When his mother and father complain to him, Shimshon's like, no, I want this girl. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer lo aviv imo. There are no Jewish girls here that you have to choose. This shiks over here. What does he say at the end of Pasuk Gimel? Oso kachli ki hi yashra beinai. When the leader is worried about what's yashar in his own eyes, opposed to national interests, that's where the whole country falls apart and starts worrying about yashar be'inav. Everyone does what's yashar be'inav. Shimshon's mistake was, or Shimshon's shortcoming, I should say, was inability to lead towards national unity. A strong warrior? Absolutely. Someone who can lead into a war, or fight in a war? Absolutely. Someone who could lead the people to fight in a war together and have a sense of achdus? Unfortunately, that's where he falls short. If this is correct, why does Shimshon lead by himself? Why is he not able to bring people in with him? The truth is Shimshon does everything by himself. He's a lone ranger. If you look, for example, he goes to war by himself. He doesn't really connect to his parents. You have the story about how he's born, but there's no real connecting with his father, no real connecting with his mother, there's no story. He kills the lion and doesn't tell him what he does, highlighting some type of disconnect. When he goes down to Timnah, it's Vayered Shimshon Vaviv Imo Timnata. He goes by himself and he's accompanied by his mother and father because he does everything by himself. He doesn't really identify with the Jews. He's different, big. He's a Nazir. He's Nazir Shimshon. He has fighting with the Pelishtim all his life. He's Nishtahei Nishtaher. He's got no one around him. Shimshon is a loner. And I think this is what Chazal mean. When they say in the Pasuk, Dan Yadin Amo Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael, he'll judge them by himself. Who from Dan judges by himself? Say Chazal. Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael Ki Yechidu Shalom Sheinu Tzarech Lachem V'mochama Kach Shimshon Midan. He goes by himself without anyone. Shimshon is alone. But more than alone, Shimshon realizes he's alone. You know the shockingly strange and bizarre riddle he gives to the Plishti people? You know what I'm talking about? Me'ochel yatsa maichal u'me'az yatsa matok. From something strong came food, and from something, from strength came, you know, honey. And we know what it is. It's a lion that you've killed with now that has a bunch of bees flying around in its mouth and making honey from the hive. There's no way they would have gotten that answer right. How would they have possibly known that that's the answer to the riddle? What's the point of that story? That Shimshon doesn't have to tell a joke or a riddle? L'chor, the pshat is, you ready for this? Shimshon was telling the Pelishtim, I am that strong lion on the outside with a lot of honey and sweetness on the inside, but nobody gets me. I'm not here, I'm not there, I'm alone. The answer to the riddle is maybe a lion, but the answer is also who I am. The story is included in Navi because it's about who Shimshon is. And perhaps that's captured by his name. The name Shimshon comes from the word Shemesh. It's not like at night where the stars all work together with the moon as a group lightening up the evening. The sun shines by itself. Shimshon operates alone. And by the way, look how cute this is. If Shimshon's name comes from the word sun, he shines until who puts him out? When do you no longer see the sun? At Delilah. Delilah is Delilah who puts out the sun. She's the one who strips the rays and the excitement. She's the one who takes away his ability to shine and ability to be unique. And if you ever wondered why Shimshon tells her his secret after three times of being tied up in the ropes that he was just tied up into, I think the answer is he's fed up of being different. He's fed up of being lonely. Listen to the words he says. If you tie me up this way, v'chalisi, I'll become weak. V'ayisi k'chol ha'anashim. He says it twice. Once in Tez Zayin Yud Aleph and once in Tez Zayin Yud Zayin. As if to say, I'm sick and tired of being different. You know where Shimshon got his differences from? His ability to work alone, not work with a partner? From his father. In contrast to Avram and Sarah, who work so harmoniously, so beautifully together. With respect, they talk to each other, they communicate. She's in the tent, he's outside, they're working together right next to each other. Manoach and Eshes Manoach did not work together. Manoach's condescending disrespect for his wife, an ability to work by himself, and he knows all the answers, he's the one who's going to test and see if it's an angel, he's the one who really can figure out the truth, no one else can figure out whether or not it's an angel except for me, that distaste, that disrespect he portrayed to his wife rubbed off on Shimshon, and Shimshon began to follow in his father's footsteps. That's why the story's here. You want to know where Shimshon was buried? In his father's grave. Interesting, like Yitzhak and Avraham. Add to that parallel. Shimshon followed his father's ways, believed in himself, operated by himself. The truth is, Manoach's name, you know where it comes from? Manoach. You know what Noach's mistake was? Instead of inspiring the masses and rounding them up and inspiring them to do tshuva, Noach just did it by himself. And Shimshon is Ma from the ilk of, from the students of Noach. And he passes it on to Shimshon. In contrast to Avram and Sarah, who raise a healthy family and therefore a flexible, easygoing child who trusts them and trusts others and who can solidify and concretize, Manoach and Eshet Manoach have a dysfunctional family. One where the husband doesn't respect the wife. And that's spilt over to the kids. And Shimshon doesn't know how to trust people and work with people because of that. How frum was Shimshon big machlokas? Some say he converted all his wives and some say he married Goyim. I don't know. That's not what's clear from the text. Tzaddik are not unclear. But short in his ability to lead the people together in a sense of national unity, absolutely. And if you look in Sefer Shoftim, three parts to the book. The first part of the book is the cycle. There's a Navi, Shofate, and he rules, and then he dies, and then the people all rebel, and then they send in some Goyim to control them and rule over them, and then the Jews all cry out, and Hashem sends another Navi. That happens a few times. Every time that happens, there's a Navi leading for 40 years, or Ehud Ben-Gur who led for 80. All of them in sets of 40 years, 180 years, which is twice as long. And how long Shimshon ruled for? 20. What's the point? Who Yachel, Hoshias Yisrael, he does half the job. He doesn't do the whole job. He does half. He fights the wars, but does not create national serenity afterwards. It's not a concretized, stable place where Klal Yisrael are founded during Shimshon. And ruling 20 years may capture more than just how long he ruled for, but half as long as everyone else. And for that matter, the number 40 in Judaism is a sense of like, things have been stable, now we're ready to the next stage. After Noah, Hashem wanted to destroy the world, 40 days, start anew. Matan Torah, 40 days, start anew. The Jews screwed up with in the Midbar, 40 years, start anew. And it was this choppy start anew, which one after the next, cycle after cycle, worked until things spiraled out of control. And at the end of Sefer Shoftim, things were as bad as they ever got. Pilegesh Begiva, civil war, Avodah Zarah, Pesel Micha. They killed all people because they needed more men to marry Binyamin. The whole thing is crazy. And you hear the Navi crying out until the final word, which ends on a plea, Ein Melech B'Yisrael Ish Asher Yashav Bein Av Yaseh. And between that broken rotation of what's going on until where everything got totally broken, where everything was ripped apart and society fell apart by its fabric, and it was ripped apart to its core, and things spiraled out of control. Right in the middle is Shimshon. He had the capability, or potentially the responsibility, to create a sense of solidity, create a sense of stability. And unfortunately, when Shimshon fights and does not bring stability, that's the middle section which brings Sefer Shoftim to its falling conclusion, where we need a melech. And what's the difference between a melech and a shofet? It's a big discussion amongst the Mefarshim. But the clear difference is a melech's son rules right after him. There's stability. It goes from one to the next. It's no longer a rotation where in between leaders, things fall apart. If this is correct, it's captured by another medrash. Pardon me, it's captured by the Nevuah back in Sefer Vayikra and Bereishis, where Yaakov was told, Bereishis Mem Tes Pasuk Yud Zayin, where it's told, the prophecy of Shimshon is forewarned, and it says, HaNosheich Ikfei Sus Vayipol Rechbo Achor. He bites the horse, and the rider falls off. That's what it does, but it doesn't kill anyone. Why? He's just starting. And lastly, let's kind of zoom out and look at all Nevi'im Rishonim. The Gemara in Adarim says, Il Malo Lochotu B'nei Yisrael, we wouldn't need anything except for Chamishuchum Shei Torah and Sefer Yoshua, which basically means things were supposed to be great in Sefer Yoshua, we succeed, but Sefer Shoftim, we fail. And that's really the book of Sefer Shoftim. The book of Shmuel is bouncing back, a response to Sefer Shoftim, where we institute a concept called Malchus, and things are looking promising, until we hit Sefer Malachim, where things fall apart. It'll be said differently. Two of the books are named after individuals who bring things together, Yoshua and Shoftim. Two of the books are named after positions of numerous people, many, many Shoftim, many, many Malachim, where things spiral out of control, ultimately leading in Gaul Spies Rishon. If you had to make a play with a bunch of first graders, year two kids if you're British, how many actors would you need for Sefer Yoshua? A handful. For Sefer Shoftim, numerous. Sefer Shmuel, a handful. Sefer Malachim, many. The point is, Sefer Yoshua and Shoftim about individuals trying to start anew, starting afresh, establishing a brand new form of government which is supposed to work. Sefer Shoftim and Sefer Malachim are the unfortunate reality of Klal Yisrael failing and ultimately getting sent into Galus because of those failures. El Mali Lo Chatu B'nei Yisrael, all we need is Yoshua and Chamishuchum Sheitar and Sefer Yoshua, because that really was a great peak until Sefer Shoftim, where it starts off spiraling, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad, and ultimately, the second half of Sefer Yeshua, Sefer Shoftim, pardon me, where everything falls apart, perhaps could have been fixed by someone who would have been like Yitzhak opposed to Shimshon. Whether Shimshon was a tzaddik or not, I'm not passing judgment. That's a machlokas in Mefarshim. Whether or not Shimshon led the people to national stability, I think it's pshat in the Navi. To that, the answer is no. We'll stop here. Thank you.